This Sandwell News podcast is divided into chapters.
This week, sunrise will be at 5:30, sunset at 8:40 p.m. By Tuesday, temperatures will be at around 10 degrees with moderate rain.
A warm welcome to the Sandwell News for the blind and visually impaired community living in and around Sandwell. And we're into May with this edition, and truly into spring. I think spring really starts when we get into May. And I got the weather a bit wrong last week. I think this week we should be more accurate with the weather, as I've got the app working on my phone again. Before we go any further, here are some events coming up with SVI and their activities for the forthcoming week with Artificial Alice and Real Sophie. She makes an appearance in the middle of this What's On for the next 5 or 6 days.
Hello SVI members, friends and volunteers. Here are our activities coming up next week. Tuesday, May 5th. Gym at Portway Lifestyle Centre, 10 to 12 noon. Break a sweat and boost your energy with fellow SVI members. From treadmills and bikes to weights, there's something for everyone and plenty of support to help you along the way. It's a fun, social way to stay fit and active all year round, rain or shine. Line dancing at Dartmouth Central Club, 1 to 2:30 p.m. Put on your dancing shoes and join Ray and Jean for a lively line dancing session full of fun and feel-good moves. Whether you're looking to stay active, improve your balance, or simply meet new people, this is the perfect chance. Absolute beginners are welcome. Just come along and enjoy. We'd love to see you on the dance floor. Wednesday, 6th of May. Tea and Toast, West Bromwich Town Hall, 10:30 to 12 noon. Come along to Tea and Toast this month. It's a great chance to relax, have a chat, and catch up with everyone over a hot drink and some toast. Whether you come along every month or haven't joined us in a while, you're always welcome. This month we have Chels Thomas and Connor Wright from Utilita, who will be here to talk to us about energy efficiency. We hope to see you there. Aquafit, Portway Lifestyle Centre, 1 to 2 p.m. Get summer body ready. This gentle toning activity in the water is suitable for everyone, with expert instructor Alison. Contact SVI if you are interested. Thursday, 7th of May, showdown at Portway Lifestyle Centre, 10:30 to 12:30. Come and join us for this fast-moving, interactive sport. That's a mix of table tennis and air hockey. It's specially designed for blind and visually impaired players. But the best part is anyone can play and everyone has fun. Expect laughter, friendly competition and a chance to try something a little different. Why not come along and see what it's all about?
Hello, Sophie from Wonder in Nature here. I lead Nature Connection guided walks and activities. And heritage walks looking at the landscape history. Working with Jane from Chance Heritage Trust, we would like to invite you to a guided walk in West Smethwick Park on the 7th of May, 10:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Chance Heritage Trust are custodians of the Chance Glass Factory history. The Chance Glass Factory was established in Smethwick in 1822. West Smethwick Park was opened in 1895. On land donated by James Timmins Chance. So the walk will look at some of the history of the park and explore the memorials that are there, and we'll have conversations around the history of the Chance Glass Factory, explore some of its artefacts, and talk about how to improve accessibility to such heritage items through working with Chance Heritage Trust. And they have a new, they've got their school rooms, the old school rooms, the Victorian ones, are now coming into their use, and they'd like to ensure that that works for people with visual impairment. So please do join us on the 7th of May, 10:30 a.m. from the pavilion. If you'd like to join, please register your interest with Sandwell Visually Impaired. Thank you.
Saturday, 9th May. Socialise visit to the Fixed Wheel Brewery, Blackheath at 1 p.m. Come and have a look around this Blackheath-based microbrewer. Meet Scott Povey, who will give us a guided talk with 2 pints or 4 halves and a tasty cob included in the price. He will talk us through the brewing process and, where possible, we will taste, feel and smell the main ingredients used. The cost of the tour, including tastings and a cob, is £15. Contact us to book your place. It is important that you contact the office either by phone, message, Facebook or email to let us know that you are attending any of our events. That's all for this week. We look forward to seeing you soon. The SVI team. Telephone 01215254810.
Some pieces from the week's readings from the Express and Star. Wednesday, 22nd of April. Parks closed on 4 dates. Old church to be converted into flats. Canal Trust to launch new arts area. Morris's future dependent on Albion staying in championship. Spudflation, a sign of the times. Thursday, man charged after shooting. Golg Club steps up security. Patel's speech to baggies. Heron chicks caught on camera. Thief who stole 3,000 items jailed. Friday, Albion women's boss expecting baby. Bikers urge to prepare guide dog puppies for real world. Man pleads guilty over death crash. Bakery brings burnt top cobs to its shop. Saturday, Albion considers penalty appeal. New 7-a-side football league. Man who called for migrants to be shot. UK-grown strawberries hit the shelves. 5 things we love this week. Monday, Albion players don't need motivation. Crowds protest at sacking of Morrison's manager. Arrest after drugs reported. Tackling loan sharks. Former Wednesbury Health Centre could become flats. Tuesday, money raised for blind centre. Most common parking fines revealed. Government pledge to clamp down on shoplifters. Style surprised over double awards. 10 most shoplifted items.
With that last item, we could do with a Pick of the Pops countdown. But it's no joking matter, I guess, shoplifting. But some of the items in that top 10 are quite surprising, which you'll hear about in the final day's news for Tuesday. Very nice to see so many of you at the annual general meeting last Monday. We had a lively session hosted not so much by Tony and myself, but Heather Wasty, who I think is from Cradley Heath, and we'll be hearing more from her later on, but just a taste of what we enjoyed on Monday.
My kids playing over the bock, we had a thoughtful morning. One meant, one groaned, and I ain't being funny when I says, don't call me a brummie.
Well, I'm afraid I was one of those Brummie foreigners there. I felt welcome all the same. But she's not a Brummie, but she's a yam yam. Am I supposed to say that even? Not all black country people approve of being called yam yams. And we'll hear a bit more from Heather, I hope, if I can squeeze in a bit more of her very entertaining talk and performance. Her performance is really what it was. A bit later on in the paper, with the usual news coming up, as you've just heard, along with the radio and TV listings. And I must apologise for getting those wrong last week. You heard the previous week's TV and radio listings, but I promise to try and do better now and in future. There'll be also some feedback from the mindfulness walks and tour that took place at Oak House last week, and that might inspire you to join in the upcoming walks, which are coming up in the next month or so. So without more delay, here's the first day's news.
Hello everyone, it's Mia. I'm just reading the newspaper articles from the Express and Star, dated Wednesday the 22nd of April. I hope everyone's having a lovely start to their week. I sure am enjoying The weather is slowly getting better and I'm looking forward to it heating up in the next couple of days. I hope everyone else has got some lovely plans to enjoy the sun. It's finally feeling like summer again. Park to close on 4 dates. Temporary closures have been announced at a park in the Black Country. The Sandwell Valley Visitor Centre will be closed on 4 dates over the next few weeks due to a planned power outage and resurfacing works. The visitor centre will be closed on Tuesday, April 28th, due to the planned power outage. It will also be shut on May the 7th, May the 11th, and May the 12th, due to resurfacing works. There will be no vehicle access to Lodge Hill Lane or Park Farm car parks on these dates. A Sandwell Council spokesperson advised visitors to plan their visits in advance. A statement said, "We apologise for any inconvenience and thank you for your understanding." A 143-year-old church could be converted into flats under new plans. A 143-year-old church could be converted into flats under new plans. A planning application has been submitted to Sandwell Council asking for permission to convert the 143-year-old former Hallam Street Methodist Church in West Bromwich into new flats and homes. The former Methodist Church, which closed in 2020 during the COVID-19 pandemic, having sat on the corner of Hallam Street and Lewisham Street since at least 1883, would be divided and converted into two-storey, two- and three-bed flats. Clubs and exercise halls had stopped at the Hallam Street Church a few months earlier. Several extensions to the main church would be demolished and replaced with 4 four-bed terraced homes, the application by A.V. Singh said. Under previous proposals, the church would have been demolished and replaced with 6 new homes, which drew concerns from Sandwell Council's planners and conservation officers over the loss of the building. Mr. Singh was advised to redraw the plans to reflect the building's character, saying the designs needed to be careful and sympathetic and use as much of the existing materials and architecture as possible. Canal and River Trust launches Smethwick Imaginarium Arts Programme. The Canal and River Trust has launched Smethwick Imaginarium, a new arts and community programme designed to celebrate Smethwick's rich cultural diversity and historic canals. Delivered in partnership with North Smethwick Development Trust, Brass House Community Centre, the Smethwick Interfaith Friends Group, Smethwick Library, and 6 commissioned artists, the initiative invites local people of all ages to connect creatively with the Galton Valley Canal. Supported by Arts Council England and funds raised by players of Postcode Lottery, the programme offers a series of free artist-led walks, workshops, family activities, and creative sessions taking place throughout the year. Highlights include a summer pop-up canalside art show and a community programme finale. Building on a successful 2023 pilot, the project aims to strengthen the relationship between the Smethwick community and the Galton Valley Canal. Through photography, performance, sculpture, research, graphic design, and socially engaged practice, the 6 selected artists will explore how people connect with the canal and with one another, whilst addressing barriers identified in the pilot, such as access challenges and limited awareness of the waterway's potential. The commissioned artists include Aneka French, Sarah Barton, and Beth Derbyshire. No talks on future until safety assured. Moz. James Morrison insists talks on his future as Albion head coach will only take place once the club's championship status is confirmed. The 39-year-old has salvaged the baggy season after the club appeared doomed to relegation to League One just 2 months ago. Morrison is believed to be keen on the role and told the Express and Star in recent weeks this latest spell at the helm has given him the bug. It would be a tough call from Chairman Shailen Patel's Bilkul Football WBA to overlook Morrison for the top job if he leads the Baggies to championship survival. Morrison, already an Albion legend from his playing days, has united the fan base, but the owners may feel a permanent appointment will require more thought. Morrison said, "I'm enjoying it, but I've said all along, I just want to get to the end target. Then we can talk about it. There is going to be a time for me to answer that, so I will do so in a couple of weeks." Morrison has had to contend with the development of an EFL charge of financial breach hanging over Albion for more than a week. The news of potential sanctions, including points deductions, with a hearing to take place imminently, could have rocked the boat at the Hawthorns and at the club's training base. But Morrison shut out any talk of what could happen and guided his troops to an excellent 2-0 victory at Preston on Saturday, a crucial result in the bid for survival. It is a third and longest stint that the former Scotland international has held the position of head coach in a caretaker guise at the Hawthorns. His two brief previous stints totaled just 3 games, in which Albion were unbeaten. The Baggies lost meekly at lowly rivals Oxford in late February in the first game of this current spell, leading to the boss's public tongue lashing of his players, and a response has been remarkable. The success at Deepdale extended an unbeaten run 8 matches prior to the clash against Watford on Tuesday night. Meanwhile, Albion are still targeting a final day return to fitness for club captain Jed Wallace. The 32-year-old injured his calf in training at the end of last month and has been sidelined for the club's survival run-in after some eye-catching form. The Baggies hope to have Wallace in contention to feature against relegated basement boys Sheffield Wednesday on Saturday week, May the 2nd. Spudfellation. The sign of the times at Potato Shop. Wondered why the cost of your chips has gone up? A landmark sign on a major road in the Black Country tells its own story. It has for years offered passing motorists the price of a sack of spuds, and the sign has had to be updated many times upwards. A sack cost just £4.50 back in 2020, and now it will set you back £10.50. It comes as costs for farmers soar, with the price of fertiliser jumping at least 40% because of supply issues linked to the war in the Middle East. That, along with an increase in transport costs, mean our humble potato now comes at a very unpalatable price. Gail Southall, who runs the spa shop and post office on Birmingham New Road, with her husband Paul and daughter Lucy, said the rising costs faced by farmers was a big influence on rising prices. She said, "We do what we can to keep the price down. We do drive quite a hard bargain. We do sell quite a few, but not as many as we used to. I think people are cutting back." Farmers warn other crops, including salad, as well as milk, could rise in price significantly in the next few weeks. Photos capture stunning creations at Black Country Brick Show. Hundreds of visitors turned out for the 2026 Black Country Brick Show, as the popular event returned with an array of eye-catching Lego creations and family-friendly attractions. Now in its 6th year, the show continues to grow in scale, drawing builders and enthusiasts from across the country to showcase their most ambitious designs. From historic landmarks to comic book heroes and mystical lands to marvellous creations, the 3-day event in West Bromwich gave Lego lovers across the Black Country the opportunity to enjoy some of the best builds the UK has to offer. Organiser Paul Clark said this year's show is bigger and better than ever. He said, This year we have more than 50 displays and master builders that have come from all over the world to attend. This event has just grown year on year, and this year we are offering free giveaways, build sessions, Lego bot wars, and tons of hands-on stuff for the children. We feature some highlights from the event, including detailed replicas and themed displays to interactive exhibits that proved a hit with younger visitors. Now, in this article, there's lots of pictures. Honestly, are incredible. So the pictures on the article showcase some of the Lego, the bricks that people have built, and they're just incredible. So in the top left corner, we've got Serenity Mason, who is at the Black Country Brick Show in West Bromwich. And she is just surrounded by a colourful array of Lego bricks. There's some flying in the sky that she's kind of put up. There's buildings, there's trees, there's horses, there's so much. And then in the picture below that, we've got a Lest We Forget ornament, just in Remembrance Day, in honour of Remembrance Day. So we've got a couple of poppies on the bottom and then a soldier. And it's just honestly breathtaking. And then to the right of that, in the top right corner of the article, we have a picture of Jo Maguire with her Lego wreath that looks absolutely stunning. So honestly, these things could be hung up and they really do look like the real thing. And then in the bottom right corner of the article, we have Luke Bradley, who is showcasing a Lego wrestling belt. Now that is impressive. It is a full-on Lego wrestling belt with yellow detailing and black all around the outside of the belt. It just looks incredible. And then we've also got a couple of Star Wars Lego costumes, which look amazing.
Hello, this is Jan Lloyd reading articles from the Express and Star on the 23rd of April. Man charged after shooting. West Midlands police have charged a man with attempted murder after another man was shot in Smethwick last month. A Kobe Falarin, aged 23, is also accused of possession of a firearm with intent to endanger life. He appeared before magistrates in Wolverhampton on Saturday and was remanded to appear before the city's Crown Court on May the 18th. A 20-year-old arrested on suspicion of possession of Class A drugs with intent to supply at the same time has been released on bail. Police were called to Bearwood Road at around 1:30 a.m. on March the 11th, after a 19-year-old victim was shot in the leg. The victim was also arrested on suspicion of violent disorder and has been released on police bail and released from hospital. Another man, aged 21, has previously been charged with attempted murder and remanded in custody. Golf club meets with police and council over vandalism. Community club to look at stepping up security in wake of damage to course, by James Vukromovich. A meeting has taken place to discuss a recent spate of vandal attacks at a West Bromwich golf club and the next steps to take forward to prevent a recurrence. Golf club staff and members at Dartmouth Community Golf Club were left heartbroken when they saw months of hard work ruined as a biker left fairways and greens severely damaged with tyre tracks left in the ground. The club said the first attack was in February, then there was a repeat incident in March and another last Wednesday night, which it said will cost tens of thousands of pounds to repair. On Friday, club director Moses Gill, club captain Sean Evans, vice captain Dan Elwell and other members of the club held a meeting with police officers from West Midlands Police and members of Sandwell Council at the club's Lewisham restaurant to discuss the attacks and what could be done to avoid a repeat. The meeting saw topics discussed such as how the club was private property, so members of the public shouldn't be walking up and down the path on the course, and what steps could be taken to improve security around the course, and what support the council as landlords could give the club. Mr. Gill said he wanted to look at CCTV cameras and also put up barricades at sections around the course to restrict access to the grounds of the club, as well as signage indicating that the land was private and not open to the public. Representatives from Sandwell Council said they would look at ways that the council could help through financial and other means and speak to the relevant people in the council. while police officers in attendance said they would continue to do door-to-door knocks and other ways of engaging with the public. Speaking after the meeting, Mr. Gill said it was imperative that people were aware of what the club was doing in the community and spoke about how he felt the meeting had gone. He said, "I think the feedback we've had from the local authority and police has been very productive, but I think people need to be aware of what we're trying to create here, which is a great wellness and health and fitness golf club that people can use with great restaurant facilities. Looking ahead, predominantly, we've got to look at how we can secure our boundaries, make sure our community has more input in how we can serve them and how they can help us develop. We totally understand that local authorities are struggling with funding and everything else out there, but they ultimately need to protect green spaces like this because it will have an effect on the community, not just us." Sean Evans and Dan Elwell also agreed that the next steps forward needed to help preserve the club as a community club and said they felt progress had been made. Mr. Evans said, "It's a club and a community, and I think we're trying to do at Dartmouth this season is build a community, not just a golf club. So this has been about raising awareness of what this is affecting, as it's not just the club, it's the whole community. I do think we've been heard today, and just for them to turn up today was a positive step. So let's keep the momentum going and drive it forward. We want this club to be part of the community, put on events for families, and we've got a lot of stuff planned, but it's very much about building a community area that, frankly, has been lost for many years." Mr. Elwell said, "I think it's positive to have the presence of the police and Sandwell Council, and I think we have a clear message now of what we need from the council, which includes physical barriers, as that's the only way we're going to stop people from getting onto the course. We're not discouraging people from enjoying these facilities, but it has to be done in the right way, respecting the course and understanding what a dangerous place it can be if you don't know where you're walking. What we want to do is educate the community and use it in the right way, build up that trust with the community. So we need to stop these things happening, and then that gives us the opportunity to promote more community events." The article is accompanied by a photograph of the officials of the club meeting with the police, and also a photograph of the tyre marks that have caused so much damage to one of the greens, where someone has obviously driven their bike round and round on the green around the flag. Patel delivers speech to Baggies after vital win. James Morrison revealed owner and chairman Shilan Patel delivered a speech to Albion's dressing room after the 3-0 victory over Watford. Florida-based businessman Patel has been a regular at the Hawthorns and on the road to watch the club he took over more than 2 years ago, and was present in the Black Country for a crucial clash against the Hornets. The resurgence under Morrison continued with a 3-0 win to make it 9 matches unbeaten, and Patel marked the achievement by addressing the staff and players at full time. Morrison, though, remained coy when pressed for what Patel's message was. "The club continued to await the outcome of the Independent Commission hearing regarding an EFL charge of financial breach." "Yes, he did," Morrison said when asked if the chairman enjoyed it. "He came down to the dressing room after and said a few things, and it was nice. That's good to hear." What goes on in the dressing room, though, stays in the dressing room. Patel watched the fixture from the director's box with executive director Mark Miles and non-executive director Jason Roberts. Albion moved 8 points clear of the relegation places with just 2 games remaining. Mathematically, survival is secured, but the achievement cannot yet be toasted due to the outcome of the hearing. Calls for Morrison to be appointed permanent Albion head coach beyond the summer continue to grow as he maintains the stunning run. The former Scotland international has maintained talk of his future can wait until a final ball is kicked, but he gave a further hint of his aspiration with a comment when quizzed on his position. "I think it's a conversation at the end of the season," Morrison said on the subject. "I always put this club first and what's best for the football club. It's a massive football club, and in this division it has high expectation. It comes with a lot of things. It wasn't long time ago we were in the Premier League. It's a big job to try and get them back into the Premier League, where we belong." Asked if he could be the man to do that, Morrison replied, "Well, if I'm given the chance, Who knows? And there's a photograph of Shilan Patel in his suit, waiting to speak to people at the Hawthorns. Rare Glimpse of Heron Chicks Caught on Camera by Emma Walker. Three grey heron chicks have been photographed huddling together in their nest at Sandwell Valley, offering a close-up glimpse into one of the region's most recognisable wetland species. The image, taken by wildlife photographer Stephen Kendrick, shows the young birds perched high above the ground, still covered in soft down as they wait for their next meal. Their alert expressions and tightly packed formation reflect both their vulnerability and constant demand for food during the early stages of life. Grey herons are a familiar sight across the UK, often seen standing motionless at the water's edge before striking quickly at fish. Sandwell Valley, known for its mix of wetlands, woodland and open spaces, provides an ideal habitat for breeding pairs. Spring marks a crucial time for herons, with chicks growing rapidly and relying heavily on their parents for survival. Both adults share feeding duties, making frequent trips to nearby water sources to catch fish and other small prey. Capturing the moment required patience and careful positioning. Local wildlife groups say the sight of healthy chicks is an encouraging sign for the area's ecosystem, as herons play a key role in maintaining balance within wetland environments. And the photograph that accompanies this picture is quite amazing. There are the three chicks that I have to say are particularly ugly. They're grey with long yellow beaks and a little yellow beady eye, and their hair is sticking up like punk rockers, obviously still very fluffy. Not the most attractive of birds at this stage, I have to say. And they're clearly sitting in a very lopsided sort of nest made of twigs with greenery starting to come to fruition around them. But it's a lovely photograph. Thief who stole £3,000 worth of items from store is jailed. A shop thief has been jailed after targeting an Albury store more than a dozen times. In just over 1 month, Mohammed Sufian Khan, aged 31, targeted a supermarket on Freeth Street 16 times, stealing around £3,000 worth of items. He also stole items from a supermarket on Wensbury Oak Road, Tipton, on April the 7th, and a supermarket on Wallows Lane, Walsall, on January the 4th. His crime spree started on March the 8th, where he entered the store and stole more than £100 of alcohol. On Saturday, April the 11th, after stealing more alcohol, Khan was detained by a security guard, who was then further assaulted by Khan, and the stolen goods were retrieved. West Midlands police responded and arrested him, and following a search, a lock knife was also found in Khan's waistband. He was charged with 17 counts of shop theft, possession of a knife and assault. He appeared at Wolverhampton Magistrates Court last week and was sentenced to 36 weeks in prison. Sergeant Jason Walters of Sandwell South Retail Crime Team said, "Khan not only stole thousands of pounds of items from one specific store, but when he was arrested, was also found to be in possession of a knife."
Hello, this is Rachel, and I've got some recordings for you from the 24th of April. Albion Women boss expecting baby this year. Albion Women manager Siobhan Hodgett-Still has announced she is pregnant. Hodgett-Still will take charge of the final match of the Baggies Women's National League campaign against Middlesbrough this Sunday. The Albion boss will remain in her role before temporarily stepping down ahead of the 2026-27 campaign, with the club already starting the process of appointing an interim boss. "We're absolutely delighted to share the news we are pregnant and incredibly excited for the arrival of our baby this summer," said Hodgett-Still. "I would like to thank everyone at the football club for their amazing support. This truly is a family club, and that has shone through in my conversations with the club's leadership over recent weeks." Albion Women currently sit sixth in the National Northern Premier as they approach the end of the campaign. Hodgett-Still added, "We're working hard behind the scenes to ensure a smooth transition process, and I'm confident we'll appoint the right person to lead us during my absence as we build on the solid foundations we have established in recent seasons." bikers urged to help train guide dog puppies for the real world. The rumble of Harley-Davidson motorbikes is being used to help train guide dog puppies. The Guide Dogs for the Blind Association, GDBA, has issued a plea for motorbike owners to sign up as volunteers to help prepare the next generation of guide dogs for the road ahead. Motorbikes can startle young dogs, and the charity needs volunteer riders to help raise the puppies during their important first year. Kian, a 10-week-old golden retriever, met Harley Owners Group, HOG, riders in Kidderminster who are trying to help the young pup grow more comfortable around motorbikes. Around 100 puppy raisers are needed every month to meet demand, according to the GDBA, which is working with the Harley Owners Group. Hayley Andrews, head of puppy raising, said motorbikes can be unsettling for dogs, but added that for a guide dog, the fear isn't just a nuisance. It can be a genuine safety risk for the person relying on them. She said, "Socialisation is such a fundamental part of our guide dog's training. Our puppies need to encounter the real world in all its noise and unpredictability. None of that happens without our incredible volunteer puppy raisers, who are pivotal to what we do." Ms. Andrews said, "We would love to hear from keen motorbikers and enthusiasts who can help our puppies build the confidence and focus they need to stay calm when it matters most." Kevin Taplin of Harley Owners Group, Wolferina chapter, said, "It was great to see Kian's response to our Harley-Davidson bikes. We hope early exposure to motorbikes and all their gear helps pups like him in their training go on to become incredible guide dogs." Along with the article is a photograph with the caption, "Kian, a 10-week-old golden retriever, meets with Harley-Davidson riders." And it shows Kian the puppy running along a garden happily with three Harley-Davidson riders in their riding leathers in the background. Man Pleads Guilty Over Death Crash by Daniel Walton. A man has pleaded guilty to causing death by dangerous driving after a tragic crash in the Black Country. Corey Brown of Albert Street, Lye, near Stourbridge, has pleaded guilty to causing death by dangerous driving after the car he was travelling in crashed into a lamppost in Oldbury last month. The 20-year-old appeared at Wolverhampton Crown Court yesterday to confirm his name and enter his plea after being charged with causing the death of Christian Danilov on March the 29th. Christian was one of two passengers to receive injuries after the car he was travelling in crashed into a lamppost on Newbury Lane, Oldbury, just before 11 p.m. on Friday, March 20th. Following the crash, Brown was charged with two counts of causing serious injury by dangerous driving. However, one count was upgraded to death by dangerous driving after Christian passed away from his injuries 9 days later. The second passenger survived the incident. Appearing to enter his plea, Brown pleaded guilty to death by dangerous driving, causing serious injury by dangerous driving, driving whilst disqualified, and driving a motor vehicle without insurance. Presided by Judge Simon Ward yesterday, Brown was told to expect a lengthy sentence for his offences. Judge Ward said, "You will know to expect a lengthy custodial sentence." Brown was remanded into custody and is due to appear for sentencing at Wolverhampton Crown Court on July 3rd. Bakery Bringing Burnt Top Cobs to New Shop by James Vikramovich. A popular Black Country baking chain has announced that it will be bringing its brand of baked goods to a new town. Bake My Day has become a popular chain for its brand of traditional burnt top cobs, freshly baked cakes and bakes, and range of sandwiches, with queues being seen out the door of its three chain stores in Great Bridge, Blackheath, and its newest store in Oldbury. The stores are owned and run by Nathan Hadley, who works with his team of five to start baking at 3 a.m, with staff also working at the different stores to bake cronuts, eclairs, and other popular dishes. The chain has now announced on social media that it will be bringing the Bake My Day brand and tastes to another Sandwell town after announcing it had taken up shop on Union Street near to the bus stop next to Morrison's. A spokesman for Bake My Day said, So, after negotiations and popular demand, we are pleased to announce that Bake My Day will be coming to the town of Wednesbury. We are so excited as a family to be serving the people of Wednesbury, and we will be based on Union Street at number 46A. The grand opening day to be announced, and thank you to all valued customers. Along with the article is a photograph with the caption, "The bakery chain is famed for its burnt top cobs and fresh cakes," and shows one of the workers standing outside the Bake My Day shop holding a very large tray full of burnt top cobs.
Hello everyone, this is Linda, reading from Saturday, the 25th of April's Express and Star. Albion consider penalty appeal. Albion are considering an appeal against the 2-point deduction they have received for breaching EFL financial regulations. The Baggies have been thrown back into the Championship relegation mix after a penalty for breaching profit and sustainability regulations. The club strongly disagree with the outcome of an independent commission hearing, which reopens the door to relegation from the second tier. Albion won 3-0 at home to Watford on Tuesday night to continue a magnificent run of 9 games unbeaten to go 8 points clear of the Championship drop zone with 2 fixtures left. It would have sealed Championship safety, but with the outcome of the hearing hanging over the club, and fears were confirmed on Friday afternoon, where the Commission reached a decision on the charge 24 hours after a 2-day hearing, believed to be unprecedented timing in a case of this nature. It emerged a change this year in Profit and Sustainability Regulations, PSR, when it comes to community spending, is behind the breach of less than £2 million. Albion's owners, Bill Cole Football WBA, fronted by Chairman Shilan Patel, have financially supported the Albion Foundation since their takeover 2 years ago. The Baggies, who say they will further comment upon receipt of written reasons of the penalty, signed off their club statement with, "For now, we will settle this on the pitch." The statement also read, "The club disagrees with the CFRP's findings and remains of the view that it has fully complied." Innovative seven-a-side league that blends football and fitness is launched. A new grassroots football initiative is kicking off in the Black Country, offering local players the chance to stay active, socialise and compete in a supportive environment. Social 90 is a new seven-a-side league held every Thursday evening from 8 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. at Ormiston Academy in Tividale that has been launched with a focus that goes beyond just the game. While matches are naturally the focus, the league also aims to promote fitness, mental well-being, along with a sense of community among participants. The project was founded by a group of local organisers, Nicky Banks, Adam Reeson, Alex Bradburn, Mitch Sayers, Rob Baker and Geordie Tallock, who are all volunteer their time to run the league. Each plays a role behind the scenes, from administration and design to social media and general organisation. The idea for Social 90 grew out of their involvement with Sandwell Social FC, a well-being-focused amateur football team competing in the Midlands Fitness Football League. Building on that experience, the founders wanted to create something more accessible and engaging for a wider group of players. The league has been self-funded so far, with organisers covering initial costs, such as pitch hire. As part of the launch, the first 36 founding members are set to receive free Adidas shirts, complete with team logos and sponsorship, designed and printed in-house. A unique feature of Social 90 is its innovative goals, ghost goals system, which links off-pitch efforts to match outcomes. Teams are set weekly challenges, ranging from fitness targets to social activities, and those who meet them can earn advantages during games. The concept has already made an impact. In the opening week, both matches ended in draws and were ultimately decided by these bonus penalties, underlining the importance of commitment beyond match night. The league's name itself is inspired by football nostalgia, referencing the iconic Total 90 era, with that theme carrying through into team names and social media content. Organisers say the aim is to create more than just a weekly fixture. It's about giving people a routine, a team environment, and something to work towards each week, both on and off the pitch, they said. Players are also encouraged to set personal goals, whether related to fitness, weight loss, or simply meeting new people. For more information, you can check out at Social90Football on Instagram and Facebook. Man who called for migrants to be shot admits hate posts. A man has admitted making hate posts on X in which he called for migrants coming to the UK in small boats to be shot. Joseph Peter Ash, 39, admitted four offences of publishing threatening or abusive written material on the platform formerly known as Twitter, intending to stir up racial hatred. The charges relate to multiple posts the defendant made in 2024 and the posting of a national action video on September the 18th of that year. Ash, from Wensbury West Midlands, entered his guilty pleas at a hearing yesterday before Mrs Justice Chima Grubb at the Old Bailey. Prosecutor Crystal Post told the court his posts had supported extreme right-wing ideology. Some were anti-Semitic and promoted anti-Jewish conspiracy theory, and others targeted migrants and non-whites, she said. Ash referred to migrants and non-whites as invaders and human trash, whose purpose was to rape, kill and get free handouts, the court was told. In posts, he wrote about setting fire to migrant hotels and stated that migrants who come to the UK in small boats should be shot. Ash denied a fifth charge of dissemination of a terrorist publication on no less than nine occasions between August the 25th and September the 6th, 2024. Mrs Justice Chima Grubb said the case would be heard at Birmingham Crown Court. The senior judge set a plea hearing for July the 24th and a trial from November 15 next year. The defendant was granted continued bail. Sweet fruits of British sunshine at Tesco. UK-grown strawberries are arriving on supermarket shelves after days of bright sunshine and above-average temperatures boosted growth. Punnets will begin to arrive on some Tesco shelves this weekend, the supermarket said. The grocer expects to receive 300 tonnes of UK-grown fruit next week, roughly 1 million punnets, up by more than 100% just 3 weeks ago. The whole of the UK is set to be supplied by mid-May. The news means retailers will have to rely less on Spanish and Moroccan imports in the next few weeks. Tesco strawberry buyer Callum Baker said, "The start of the outdoor British strawberry season is a huge feel-good moment in the year, as it means summer is just around the corner, with many months ahead of outdoor living. Next week marks a significant step forward in the transition to British supply, with volumes of UK strawberries into Tesco set to increase by more than double since the beginning of April. Based on the extra sunshine we've just had and good weather forecast, we predict our total UK strawberry volume to be around 40% next week. If the weather stays relatively good from now, then we'll see the UK-wide availability by mid-May." Five things we love this week. More than 3,000 toads, frogs and newts have been helped across a road to reach their breeding lake. The Sharlcombe Toad Rescue Group helped thousands of amphibians across a half-mile stretch of Sharlcombe Lane near Bath during this year's migration season. Collectively, more than 50 volunteers spent more than 600 hours in high-vis jackets, armed with torches and buckets, walking slowly up and down the road. Toads, frogs and newts are carefully picked up with latex-free, powder-free gloves to avoid any chemicals from volunteers' hands affecting them, and taken safely in buckets to drop-off points. The Toad Patrol has helped more than 55,000 amphibians in 23 years. A Tartan Army fan walking 3,000 miles across the US has reached the halfway point, stating his team and a nice cold pint at the end are keeping him going. Craig Ferguson, 22, set off from Santa Monica Pier, Los Angeles, on February the 22nd and reached the 1,500-mile mark in Kansas on Tuesday, with the finish line in Boston, Massachusetts, where he hopes to reach ahead of Scotland's opening World Cup match with Haiti in June. Mr. Ferguson of Paisley left his job with Nando's back home in order to complete the challenge, aiming to become the first man in the world to walk across the States in a kilt. He is aiming to raise £1 million for Scottish Action for Mental Health. British poet laureate Simon Armitage has met school children at London Zoo, where he recited the new poem he has written to mark ZSL's 200th anniversary. In the poem, he conjures a nighttime world where animals are cared for in quiet, unseen moments as the world sleeps. The moon and the zoo celebrates the connection between wildlife and humans in honour of the conservation charity, which was founded in 1826. The poem has also been released as an animated film, which imagines the moon as a silent, nocturnal keeper moving through London Zoo after dark. The animation, illustrated by Greg King and narrated by Armitage, is being shared ahead of ZSL's milestone anniversary next week on April the 29th. The full animation and poem can be viewed at www.zsl.org/poem. An over 300-year-old tree, which inspired the cottage in the Brambley Hedge books, has been discovered in Epping Forest. The crabapple tree is said to have inspired Jill Barklam's illustration of Crabapple Cottage in the beloved children's series. The distinctive tree is believed to be the only known pollarded tree of its species in the forest, standing near Barn Hoppet and Warren Pond. The area is known to have been a favourite walking and sketching spot for the celebrated illustrator and author. Barklam's son and daughter visited the tree this week and confirmed that the shape, setting and surrounding landscape fitted their mother's initial inspiration for the crabapple cottage. Her daughter Lizzie said, "Seeing this tree and the landscape around it, it's easy to recognise how it found its way into Brambley Hedge." Three baby rabbits have been rescued after being found on a drilling rig in the North Sea. It is thought the bunnies had taken up residence in an offshore container in Dundee, having found a nice warm place to hide. The container was then transported to Aberdeen and loaded onto a boat bound for the Cygnus gas field, 93 miles off the Lincolnshire coast. There, the container was transferred to the Valaris Norway rig at Ithaca Energy's Cygnus platform, where two of the intrepid creatures looked freedom and were found funning around the pipe deck. After the pair were rescued by the crew, who were at the time unaware there was a third, they were taken to New Ark Wildlife Rescue near Ellen in Aberdeenshire.
Hello, this is Janet reading from the Express and Star for Monday the 27th of April. Albion players needed no extra motivation to fight. Mozza by Lewis Cox. James Morrison revealed he did not need to change his team talk to add extra motivation as Albion chased safety after a points deduction. The Baggies wrapped up the rescue job by sealing their championship status with a goalless draw at home to promotion chasing Ipswich on the penultimate day of the season. The stalemate made it 10 unbeaten and earned Albion the crucial point needed for survival after Friday's news of a 2-point deduction having been found guilty of a financial breach. Morrison, who is only currently in charge until the end of the campaign, insists the news did not influence his players. He said, "We had the cloud hanging over us. It had finally come out. We knew where we stood. We got the news, but we concentrated on the football side. The lads were in really good place, so we just cracked on. It helped us because we knew what we had to do. We spoke to the players over dinner at the training ground, but didn't have to say too much. The players made that clear. They said, 'Moz, you don't need to speak to us. so I just cracked on. No, I almost didn't need to do a team talk, really. We're 9 unbeaten. We just tried to continue. We didn't need to overcomplicate it. Just keep doing what we were doing. Albion were dominant in the first period against Ipswich, who needed a point to climb back into second. Darryl Dickey with openings either side of half-time and Une Hegabo spurned clear-cut chances. Alex Mowat was denied from range and the excellent Nat Phillips had several headed openings. Ipswich wrestled back some control inside the final half hour and had a goal correctly chalked off for the former Baggies defender Cedric Kipre. The hosts knew a point would do and Morrison's men worthy of yet another clean sheet. After 70 minutes, I could feel the momentum changing, Morrison's added. The players they were bringing on, I could see the shift, so I wanted to get some energy on the pitch, but my staff were telling me that a point was all we needed. The players left it out there on the pitch. Morrison has transformed the club's fortunes and a goalless draw in the final home game of the season means it is 7 clean sheets in 8 games in the 10th match unbeaten run and 5 in a row. It has been a phenomenal run of more than 550 minutes without shipping a goal since a 2-2 draw against Wrexham, where the Red Dragons forced from behind. The Baggies end their season at relegated basement boys Sheffield Wednesday at Hillsborough next Saturday, where Morrison has the opportunity to finish a forgettable campaign with an unbeaten run of 11 matches. Crowds protest in support of Heroic Morrison's Manager by Isabella Bonham. People protested outside Morrison's in Warsall in support of a hero supermarket manager who was sacked for tackling a shoplifter. More than 100 people gathered outside Morrison's holding placards that read "Hero Sean" and "Sean the Hero, Morrison's the Zero." Scores of cars that went past beat their horn to support too. Locals rallied together to show their support for Sean Egan, age 46, who had worked in the Aldridge Morrison store in Warsall for 29 years. He was sacked after tackling a repeated shoplifter who became aggressive while being escorted from the supermarket. Mr. Egan from Lanesfield in Wolverhampton said the incident happened in December last year and was subsequently investigated by Morrison's. The former store manager was involved in a disciplinary hearing. He said that during this hearing he had been told he would be dismissed on the grounds of not following the company's deter and not detain policy. Locals in the area are outraged in what they call the disgusting sacking of Mr. Egan. An ex-Morrison's customer at the protest told the Express and Star, "I think it's disgusting. I'm never shopping in there again. I'll be happy for Morrison's to close down and have a Lidl or Aldi there. They've got no empathy for people or their employees." An employee from Lidl in Sutton Coldfield also joined the protest today in support of Mr. Egan. The employee told the Express and Star, "I feel really bad for Sean. Someone who has worked for so long and given so much to the community, who has been dismissed for something that if it happened in the street would have been nothing. To dismiss him for that is outrageous." Mr. Egan said he gave his life and soul to Morrison's since he was 17 and worked hard. He added, "It's disappointing that the people who are running Morrison's are not people who are on the shop floor or in the front line. I really want some change to take place, not just for people at Morrison's, but people who work in retail and hospitality. The policy that is in right now, deter and not detain, needs to be updated. Morrison's told the BBC that he could not comment on individual cases, but the health and safety of all colleagues and customers was of paramount importance. A spokesperson for Morrison's previously said, "We are continuing to take wide-ranging action to address the threat of shoplifting or violence in our stores. The health and safety of all colleagues and customers is of paramount importance to Morrison's. We have very clear guidance, procedures and controls in place to protect our colleagues and customers from the risk of harm, which must be strictly followed. These include detailed procedures for handling shoplifting incidents, which are in place to protect both the colleague involved and surrounding colleagues and customers, and which seek to de-escalate and calmly control the situation. We will not ask colleagues to put themselves at risk." Six arrests after reports of drugs. Six people have been arrested following reports of drug dealing in Sandwell shops. West Midlands Police on Friday carried out warrants alongside Trading Standards colleagues at two shops and a flat on Cradley High Street. Following the warrants, two men aged 42 and 29 were arrested on suspicion of supplying Class A drugs, while a 56-year-old woman was arrested on suspicion of possession of Class A drugs. As part of the same investigation, three men aged 51, 21 and 19 were arrested in Albury earlier in the day on suspicion of supplying Class A drugs. Several items were seized as part of the investigation, including suspected drugs and paraphernalia, suspected counterfeit cigarettes, suspected counterfeit cash, and a number of electronic items, including phones and laptops. Advice Group wins recognition for work tackling loan sharks. By Sally Ann Yule. A citizens' advice centre in the Black Country has won national recognition for its work to support the fight against loan sharks. The Sandwell and Walsall branch has become an official partner of the England Illegal Money Lending Team, the IMLT. The IMLT, also known as Stop Loan Sharks, is a national organisation that investigates and prosecutes loan sharks and supports borrowers. The Sandwell and Walsall branch helped to raise awareness about Stop Loan Sharks on social media, in waiting rooms and at events, and over 70 staff and volunteers have undergone specialist training. David Benbow, head of the IMLT, which is hosted by Birmingham City Council, said, "We are delighted to welcome Citizens Advice Sandwell and Walsall as an official partner. We are hugely grateful for the work they do to support us in disrupting illegal lending that causes such misery. Partners like this are invaluable in removing these criminals from our communities." Matt Lorimer, Chief Executive Officer of Citizens Advice Sandwell and Walsall, added, "We are delighted that Citizens Advice Sandwell and Walsall has been awarded partner recognition by Stop Loan Sharks. We are always looking at new ways of working with partners and excited to have gained this award. Many illegal moneylenders are well known within their communities and are often introduced to borrowers through friends or family members. They are unregulated and give loans with no paperwork, often adding charges and high interest to loans. They can resort to threats, intimidation, and even violence if repayments are not made. Anyone affected by illegal money lending should call the Stop Loan Sharks helpline on 0300 055 2222, or visit stoploansharks.co.uk. The team can also be reached via WhatsApp on 07700102773.
Welcome back to the Express and Star Pub Quiz. News. Question 1. A meeting between the late Queen and which beloved children's character has been recreated with toys? Question 2. Which UK landmark was illuminated with images of Scotland's female footballers in a tribute to the women's game? Question 3. Which UK theatre mogul is selling off part of his private wine collection to raise money for charity? Sport. Question 4. How long is an Olympic velodrome track? Question 5. In which sport did Great Britain's Imran Shawani win an Olympic gold medal in Seoul in 1988? Remember when? Question 6. Britain, Ireland and Denmark became members of the EEC. The Open University awarded its first degrees. Red Rum won the Grand National in a record time, and Princess Anne married Captain Mark Phillips. But what was the year? Question 7. The USA hosted football's World Cup. The Channel Tunnel was officially declared open. An earthquake measuring 6.7 on the Richter scale hit Los Angeles, and Tony Blair became Labour Party leader. But what was the year? Who am I? Question 8. An actress, dancer and singer, I was born in Swindon in 1982. In 1998, I became the youngest female solo artist ever to debut at number one in the UK charts. I won the award for Most Popular Actress at the 2005 and 2006 National Television Awards for my portrayal of Rose in the sci-fi series Doctor Who. But who am I? Question 9. A director and screenwriter, I was born in New Zealand in 1956. I co-founded the charity Comic Relief. I penned several well-known TV comedies, including Blackadder and The Vicar of Dibley, as well as the scripts for movies such as Notting Hill. I made my directorial debut with the 2003 film Love Actually. But who am I? Great local news. Question 10. This month, Wolverhampton IT manager and Bhangra dancer Rana Singh won a prize on a BBC game show dating back to 1979 and originally hosted by Terry Wogan. Contestants must fill in the missing word in a phrase and match their answer with those given by a panel of six celebrities. What is the name of this long-running BBC quiz show? How's your knowledge for this week's quiz? Click to the answers to find out. Here are the answers to this week's quiz. News. Question 1. A meeting between the late Queen and which beloved children's character has been recreated with toys? Paddington Bear. Question 2. Which UK landmark was illuminated with images of Scotland's female footballers in a tribute to the women's game? Edinburgh Castle. Question 3. Which UK theatre mogul is selling off part of his private wine collection to raise money for charity? Andrew Lloyd Webber to raise funds for the Music in Secondary Schools Trust. Sport. Question 4. How long is an Olympic velodrome track? 250 metres or 820 feet. Question 5. In which sport did Great Britain's Imran Shawani win an Olympic gold medal in Seoul in 1988? Field hockey. Remember when? Question 6. Britain, Ireland and Denmark became members of the EEC. The Open University awarded its first degrees. Red Rum won the Grand National in a record time. And Princess Anne married Captain Mark Phillips. But what was the year? 1973. Question 7. The USA hosted football's World Cup. The Channel Tunnel was officially declared open. An earthquake measuring 6.7 on the Richter scale hit Los Angeles. And Tony Blair became Labour Party leader. But what was the year? 1994. Who am I? Question 8. An actress, dancer and singer, I was born in Swindon in 1982. In 1998, I became the youngest female solo artist ever to debut at number one in the UK charts. I won the award for Most Popular Actress at the 2005 and 2006 National Television Awards for my portrayal of Rose in the sci-fi series Doctor Who. But who am I? Billy Piper. Question 9. A director and screenwriter, I was born in New Zealand in 1956. I co-founded the charity Comic Relief. I penned several well-known TV comedies, including Blackadder and The Vicar of Dibley, as well as the scripts for movies such as Notting Hill. I made my directorial debut with the 2003 film Love Actually. But who am I? Richard Curtis. Great local news. Question 10. This month, Wolverhampton IT manager and Bhangra dancer Rana Singh won a prize on a BBC game show dating back to 1979 and originally hosted by Terry Wogan. Contestants must fill in the missing word in a phrase and match their answer with those given by a panel of six celebrities. What is the name of this long-running BBC quiz show? Blankety Blank! Thanks for joining me in this week's quiz. I'm Sarah Ann and I'll be back next time. Bye!
Don't bring me no burgers, don't bring me no pies. Don't bring me no nuggets or I'll black wolf your eyes. Find some pies for me if you please. And it's highly reinforced, your pies to make mushy. Don't bring me no pasties, you know I ain't Cornish. Don't bring me no nachos, they are very Moorish. Find some pies for me. Don't bring me no noodles, they're slippery and foreign. Don't bring me no haggis, I don't wear a spoon. Find it some pants for me if you please. It's hanging in fussy towels, your pants to be mushy. Don't bring me no fries, I'm English, not French. Don't bring
People ask for more information about the Urgent Treatment Centre in Sandwell. Urgent Treatment Centre. The Urgent Treatment Centre is based at Sandwell Health Campus, formerly Sandwell Hospital, West Bromwich, and is accessible to all patients. It offers GP-led urgent but not emergency care for ailments such as suspected broken bones, abdominal pain and minor illnesses. Patients from all areas are able to attend. However, if they are not registered with a GP, they will be asked to sign up. The centre is open 7 days a week from 7am to 1am. Appointments can be made by calling NHS 111 or you can walk in. For life-threatening emergency care, please go to the Midland Metropolitan University Hospital A&E department, which is located in Grove Lane, Smethwick.
Some audio described TV programmes for the next week along with radio programme highlights from Talking News Federation. Search for publications TNF Soundings to hear these directly on their website.
TNF Soundings.
Hello, this is Diane welcoming you to your audio described TV programmes starting Saturday 2nd and ending Friday 8th of May, which has been written by Christine. Starting with Saturday. After Channel 4's early morning American sitcom fest, Saturday afternoon takes you on James Martin's American Adventure at 12:30, this one travelling to Los Angeles. British medical history is made in Bill Bailey's extraordinary portraits on BBC Two at 5:30, when two sisters share an amazing bond as one donates her womb to the other to enable her to give birth. Over on Channel 4, Love It or List It comes from Alberton at 5:30, while on ITV, it's Celebrity Catchphrase at 6. Your Saturday evening choices include the final episode of Secret Africa Into the Wild at 7, followed by visits to South African caves and an historic Swedish lighthouse in World's Most Secret Hotels at 8, both on Channel 4, whilst on ITV, It'll Be All Right on the Night is at 9. The paramedics face a life and death situation in the call centre on BBC One at 8:45 in Casualty, followed by Not Going Out at 9:35. You have four evening film choices. On Channel 4 at 9, Idris Elba is an all-action doctor who must protect his family from a man-slaying lion in Beast. Also on Channel 4 at 10:50, it's Action Adventure Assassin Club. Batman Begins is on ITV at 10:15, and an undercover cop pursues a gang of bank robbers in Point Break on BBC One at 11:50. Now on to Sunday. There's another American sitcom fest for fans through Sunday morning on Channel 4, whilst BBC One gives you a film option at 10:30 with Trolls World Tour. BBC Two has Andy Oliver's Fabulous Feasts at 11:25, which heads to Bridlington for a taste of local lobster, and Alan Titchmarsh is in Folkestone for Love Your Garden on ITV at 12:25. The afternoon kicks off with the classic sci-fi adventure film E.T. at 4 p.m. on ITV. Channel 4 takes you to George Clark's Amazing Spaces at 5:35, and David Attenborough's Secret Garden is at 6:15 on BBC One. Sunday evening offers the Great Celebrity Bake Off for Stand Up to Cancer on Channel 4 at 7, followed by Cruising to the Ends of the Earth at 8, while on BBC One you can hear all about the making of the epic David Attenborough series Life on Earth. This is also at 8. At 9 p.m, The Cage continues on BBC One. Action thriller Secret Service is on ITV, and Channel 4 continues its Your Song series. Gogglebox is on Channel 4 at 10:05, and then there are three evening film options. First World War epic 1917 on BBC Two at 10. Oscar-winning Batman drama The Dark Knight on ITV at 10:25. And comedy action film Free Guy on Channel 4 at 11. There are a few changes to the schedule of programmes which are usually on at the same time, same channel, each weekday because of Bank Holiday Monday and local council election coverage on Friday. Channel 4 has a triple helping of Everybody Loves Raymond from 7:55am, followed by two episodes of Frasier from 9:20am and Chateau DIY at 5pm. BBC One's Homes Under the Hammer is at 11:30am and Bargain Hunt at 12:15 every weekday except Friday, when council elections coverage on BBC One means that BBC Two has Homes Under the Hammer at 11 and Bargain Hunt at 12. ITV's Dickinson's Real Deal is at 2pm every weekday except Monday, and BBC Two follows Michael Portillo's Great Korean Railway Journeys at 6:30pm every weekday. Then for the soaps, EastEnders 7:30 on BBC One every weekday except Friday, Emmerdale 8 o'clock and Coronation Street 8:30 on ITV every weekday. Now on to Monday. Fantasy adventure film The Kid Who Would Be King is on at 11:55 on Channel 4, and our celebration of David Attenborough continues with Dinosaurs The Final Day on BBC One at 2. You can follow the lives of Brits seeking a fresh start in new series Escape to Florida on Channel 4 at 4pm, and into the evening Sarah Cox presents The Marvellous Miniature Workshop at 7 on BBC One. Channel 4 gives you Love It or List It at 7:30, The Doghouse at 8, Virgin Island at 9, True Crime Drama Series Love Cheats at 10, and Super Surgeons at 11:05. Over on BBC One, it's Heat 3 of MasterChef at 8, followed by two episodes of Mint at 9 and 9:30, and the thriller series Secret Service is on ITV at 9. There are three film options on Monday evening. The Great Escape on BBC Two at 10, which features a World War II veteran sneaking out of his care home to attend the 70th anniversary of D-Day. Fantasy action film Hellboy 2 on ITV at 10:15, and Mud on BBC Two at 11:30, which follows two young boys who join a mystery man's quest to reunite with his one true love. Now on to Tuesday. David Attenborough joins Fossil Hunters in the Cliffs of Dorset at 2:30pm on BBC One, and you can follow Lions, Cheetahs and Leopards in Botswana on BBC Two's Big Cats at 3:30. It's back to Sir David at 7:30 on BBC Two with Planet Earth 2, and at 8 o'clock you can choose between Alan Carr's Interior Design Masters on BBC One and the start of a new series on Channel 4, Jamie's Ultimate Barbecue, with Jamie Oliver giving us tips for improving our outdoor grilling skills. 9 o'clock sees the continuation of Virgin Island on Channel 4, Secret Service on ITV and MasterChef on BBC One. In 1980, a casino in Nevada is terrorised by a booby-trapped bomb and a $3 million ransom note in a new documentary series on BBC Two at 9:45. This is a bomb, the Nevada Casino Heist. George Ramsay's Secret Service is at 10 on Channel 4, followed at 11 by 24 Hours in A&E, while over on BBC One, it's the second episode of Half Man at 10:40. And on ITV, True Crime Presents is at 10:45pm. David Olusoga explores the history of Covent Garden in The People's Piazza at 11 on BBC Two, and there is a late-night film choice. Classic psychological thriller The Silence of the Lambs is at 11:40 on BBC One. Next, you're programmed for Wednesday. Wiltshire is the location for Channel 4's Find It, Fix It, Flog It at 12:10, followed at 1:10 by Matt Baker's British Isles, where Matt meets the man behind the world's oldest independent railway. David Attenborough is on Dorset's Jurassic Coast at 2:30 on BBC One. There are more big cats on BBC Two at 3:30, and you can escape to Florida at 4 p.m. on Channel 4. For the Love of Dogs is at 7:30 on ITV, and more Blue Planet 2 on BBC Two, also at 7:30, with The Repair Shop on BBC One at 8. Sitcom Amanda Land returns for a new series on BBC One at 9, with Amanda's jealousy towards a new rival leading her into a mortifying display at a school careers day. Also at 9, A Taste for Murder on ITV, a new series of Surgeons at the Edge of Life on BBC Two, and the second part of Salisbury Poisoning's The Untold Story on Channel 4. Another sitcom, Only Child, returns to BBC One at 9:30, and at 10 you have 2026 on BBC Two and Gordon Ramsay's Secret Service on Channel 4, followed at 11 by Celebrity Gogglebox. And now to Thursday. Find It, Fix It, Flog It is in Buckinghamshire at 12:10, and Matt Baker is in Northern Ireland for his British Isles series at 1:10, both on Channel 4. Mammoth bones are the subject of David Attenborough's excavation at 2:30 on BBC One. Big Cats continues on BBC Two at 3:30, and an Irish dance teacher tries to juggle St Patrick's Day and her wedding celebration in Escape to Florida at 4 p.m. on Channel 4. At 8 o'clock there's more David Attenborough with Best of Seven Worlds, One Planet on BBC Two. The teams head towards Almaty, Kazakhstan's former Soviet-era capital, in Race Across the World on BBC One, and Paul Merton is driving Amazing Trains in Wales on Channel 4. The 9 o'clock options are BBC One's MasterChef, ITV's The Neighbourhood, Channel 4's Taskmaster, and BBC Two's Princes in the Tower, Lucy Worsley Investigates. Action fantasy film Batman Begins is on ITV at 10:45, and then you have Gogglebox on Channel 4 at 11:05. Finally, to Friday. Find It, Fix It, Flog It is in Gloucestershire at 12:10, and Matt Baker is in Scotland for his British Isles series at 1:10, both on Channel 4. Escape to the Country is at 2:45 on BBC Two, and Escape to Florida is at 4 o'clock on Channel 4. Barney and Bradley Walsh continue their Australian adventure in Breaking Dad at 7:30 on ITV, and Alexander Armstrong joins Chris Packham in Kent for Perfect Pub Walks at 8 on Channel 4. It's Sir David Attenborough's 100th birthday, and although not audio described, you might enjoy a celebration to honour his career from the Royal Albert Hall at 8:30 on BBC One, with tributes from public figures, leading advocates for the natural world and former colleagues. This show will feature wildlife stories set to live music from the BBC Concert Orchestra. Channel 4 has Gogglebox at 9 and First Dates at 10. ITV's The Neighbourhood is at 9 and Saving Lives at Sea is at 9:30 on BBC Two. Two episodes of St Denis Medical are on BBC One from 10:40 with the Misadventures of Ramesh Ranganathan at 11:15 on BBC Two. There are also two film choices to complete your Friday evening. Batman Action Fantasy The Dark Knight is at 10:45 on ITV, and romantic comedy Knocked Up is 11:25 on BBC One. That's it for this week. We do hope you find plenty of programmes to enjoy, and we look forward to updating you again next week.
Now for a look at some of this coming week's radio highlights, starting with Saturday, May 2nd, and drama, the first episode of Hardy's Women, Jude the Obscure, an adaptation of Thomas Hardy's final novel, the 1895 tale of Wessex stonemason Jude Fawley, who dreams of being a university scholar, tells the story from the perspective of Jude's cousin, Sue Bridehead. Hardy's Women, Jude the Obscure, 3 o'clock, Radio 4, Saturday afternoon. Operon 3 comes from a live broadcast of the New York Metropolitan House performance of Tchaikovsky's Eugene Onegin. When bookish Tatiana meets Eugene Onegin, she's immediately smitten and naively declares her feelings in a letter. Operon 3, Radio 3, 6 p.m. An Archive on 4 on Saturday night looks back to the general strike in May 1926, 9 days in which Britain came closer to revolution than ever before or since. 2 million workers down tools and the country ground to a halt. Archive on 4, Voices of the General Strike, 8 p.m, Radio 4, Saturday. Sunday, May 3rd, and the reunion this week features women's cricket as Kirsty Walk and her guests remember the 2005 Ashes success of the England women's cricket team. 10 a.m, Radio 4 on Sunday. Jason Watkins and Mackenzie Crook star in the drama Miguel de Cervantes' classic tale, Don Quixote. Knight-errant Don Quixote has resolved to restore honour and chivalry to a world that has lost its values and recruits to his cause a loyal squire, Sancho Panza, except nothing is quite as it would seem. It's in two parts. The first is on Radio 4 at 3 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. Also on Sunday, the Sunday feature, Finding Florence Mills, the Washington DC-born cabaret star, singer, dancer and comedian, who died in 1927, aged just 31. In the early 20s, she'd become the first black international celebrity. At her funeral, hundreds of thousands of people thronged the streets, and yet she's faded from cultural memory. Pianist Alison Devonshire goes in search of Finding Florence Mills, Radio 3, Sunday night, 7 o'clock. To programmes then that are broadcast each weekday at the same time, Monday to Friday, same time, same radio station. Book of the week, all week, Monday to Friday, Dark Frontier, in which marine biologist Jeffrey Marlowe recalls a number of deep sea dives that reveal how life can thrive in the most unforgiving landscapes. He begins with a deep dive into the Caribbean Sea. Dark Frontier, each weekday, 11:45 a.m, Radio 4. Nature Bang is a new series in which Becky Ripley and Emily Knight examine the science behind phenomena in the natural world, beginning with a look at how animals can adopt powerful poses to look more intimidating to predators or competing rivals. Nature Bang, 1:45, each weekday, Radio 4, Monday to Friday. Composer of the week is Béla Bartók, 1881 to 1945. Hungarian composer, considered by some to be one of the giants in the history of music. Against the backdrop of conflict in Europe, Bartók found relief in rural life and took inspiration from traditional tunes, incorporating them into his own compositions. Composer of the week, 4 o'clock, Monday to Friday, Radio 3. The essay this week is a celebration of the musicality and noise of Earth's insect singers. Long before birds took to the sky, canidids and crickets filled the air with their sonorous sounds. The essay, Insect Singers, each weekday, Radio 3, 9:45 p.m, all week. And Book of Bedtime, The Prisoner continues, Germany, November 1933, and Helmi is struggling. When he gets into a fight with Bulo, another party member, his brother Enric has to rescue him. Book of Bedtime, The Prisoner, 10:45 p.m. Each night, Radio 4. On to the individual programmes then to listen to through the week, starting once again with Monday, May 4th. A welcome return to the very funny Conversations from a Long Marriage, starring Joanna Lumley and Roger Allam. As they wake up in their new house by the seaside, Joanna is keen to meet the neighbours, but finds them unwelcoming. And how will she react when Roger discovers that an old flame lives in the same village? Conversations from a Long Marriage, Radio 4, 2:15, Monday afternoon. In Great Lives, Matthew Paris is joined by comedian John Harvey in his guise as political satirist Count Binface to pay tribute to Peter Cook, who was at the centre of the 1960s satire scene and one half of the very successful double act with Dudley Moore. Great Lives, Matthew Paris, 3 o'clock, Radio 4. In this week's The Unbelievable Truth, David Mitchell is joined by comedians, including Alan Davis and Angela Barnes, who talks on subjects as varied as pets, the brain, breakfast and shopping. The Unbelievable Truth, 6:30, Radio 4, Monday evening. Tuesday, May 5th, and there's a new series of The Gift, which explores the remarkable truths that can come to light when people take at-home DNA tests. In this opening episode, the special bond between twin sisters Michelle and Lavinia is tested. The Gift, 9 o'clock, Tuesday morning, Radio 4. The drama Takeover continues on Tuesday. Billionaire Ravi Majumdar finds that his business empire and his family start to unravel as he single-mindedly tries to destroy his lifelong adversary. Takeover, 2:15, Radio 4. History's heroes. This week, the subject, Charles Dickens. In June 1865, Dickens was sitting in the first-class carriage of a train when it crashed, near Staplehurst in Kent, an accident that would threaten to reveal his most closely guarded secret. History's heroes, 3 o'clock, Tuesday afternoon, Radio 4. In Touch with Peter White is in its usual slot at 8:40 p.m. on Tuesday night. And in Crossing Continents, we learn of Slovakian-born Nadia Marcinko, a victim of Jeffrey Epstein, who became his girlfriend for several years, as well as an alleged accomplice in the recruiting of other victims. She's never been prosecuted and has now disappeared. Reporters Jacob Poole and Tim Wellwell chart her story. Crossing Continents, 9 o'clock, Radio 4, Tuesday night. Wednesday, May 6th, Lifelines, a two-part drama by Al Smith, set in an ambulance control room. Call handler Carrie deals with a succession of emergencies that culminate in a traumatic incident. 2:15, Radio 4, Wednesday afternoon, for Lifelines. Ricardo Minanza conducts the Scottish Chamber Orchestra in Mozart's Requiem and Haydn's Mass in Time of War, a concert from April 30th at the Usher Hall in Edinburgh. Haydn's 1796 work was a reaction to the conflicts sweeping Europe following the French Revolution. The concert on Radio 3 starts at 7:30 on Wednesday night. Thursday, May 7th, and this cultural life features the playwright and novelist Michael Frayn, who reflects on the influences that have shaped his seven-decade career. He talks to John Wilson about topics including author Evelyn Waugh, the process of learning Russian, and his wife Claire Tomalin's biographies. 11 a.m, This Cultural Life, Radio 4, Thursday morning. Following on from yesterday, part two of Lifelines is on Thursday afternoon at 2:15 on Radio 4. And Michael Rosen returns with a new series of Word of Mouth. As he celebrates his 80th birthday, he's joined by comedian Darragh O'Brien to discuss how we talk about and understand time, as well as reflecting on how we look back on the different chapters of our lives. Word of Mouth, 3:30, Radio 4, Thursday afternoon. Radio 3 in Concert comes tonight from Manchester's Bridgewater Hall as Sir Mark Elder conducts the Halle Orchestra and Choir in a programme of Russian music. With works by Glinka, Rachmaninoff and Stravinsky, the concert starts 7:30, Radio 3, Thursday night. Finally, Friday, May 8th, and a new series of the thriller Limelight, Wraith, tasked with overseeing a late-night serving update at the HQ of one of Britain's biggest telecom providers, IT workers Ian and Mel unwittingly set something terrifying in motion. What's been unleashed threatens to change everything, and soon there may be no way of rectifying it. Limelight, Wrath, 2:15, Radio 4, Friday afternoon. Friday night is Music Night, brings us a concert first broadcast from London's Alexandra Palace in May 2025, marking the 80th anniversary of VE Day. It includes a medley of famous wartime songs, such as A Nightingale Sung in Berkeley Square, Kiss Me Goodnight, Sergeant Major and Elgar's Nimrod, Vaughan Williams' Shining Sword and Walton's Battle of Britain, plus many other familiar pieces. Friday night is Music Night on Radio 3 on Friday night. Finally, Free Thinking brings us The Middle, a discussion on the topic of occupying a position in the middle, from the midlife crisis to middle England, middle managers, growing up as a middle child. If you identify with any of these, tune in at 9 o'clock to Free Thinking on Radio 4, Friday night, May the 8th. And that's it. Thank you to Angela for the highlights this week. May I wish you a peaceful, safe and enjoyable one of radio listening.
TNS Soundings.
Hello, this is Trevor reading articles from the Express and Star for Tuesday the 28th of April. Chamber raises more than £3,000 for Blind Centre. More than £3,000 has been raised for Beacon Centre for the Blind by generous members of the Black Country Chamber of Commerce. The charity, which supports people living with a range of sight conditions, was the Chamber's Charity of the Year for 2025-26. Chamber Chief Executive Sarah Moorhair said, "It's been a privilege to raise so much money for Beacon Centre for the Blind during what is its 150th anniversary year. This has been a real team effort with some fantastic events and we'd really hope that our year-long partnership has been a platform for raising awareness of the incredible work Beacon do in helping people live well with sight loss. Lisa Sadler-Todd, Chief Executive of Beacon Centre in Sedgley, said, "We are incredibly grateful to the Black Country Chamber of Commerce and its members for their generosity and support throughout our 150th anniversary year. The funds raised will make a real difference in helping us continue to provide vital support to people living with sight loss across the region. A grand total of £3,701 was raised through a series of chamber initiatives. Black Country Women's Aid, BCWA, has been chosen as this year's Chamber Charity of the Year. Most common parking fines are revealed. The most common parking fines issued in Sandwell have been revealed as the number of repeat offenders has increased. Figures released by Sandwell Council under the Freedom of Information Act have shown a 9.4% increase in parking fines across the borough between 2024 and 2025. Some of the most common offences for both years included being parked in a restricted area, 25,814, being parked in a residence place, 12,888, and being parked without clear display, 8,702. Parking in a restricted street saw an increase of more than 15% between 2024, 11,991, and 2025, 13,823. Parking without a clear display also see an increase of around 5% during the same period, from 4,237 to 4,465. Parking in a restricted school area saw the largest increase in the top 10, with a 64.91% rise between 2024 and 2025, from 721 to 1,189, but was the 8th most common offence. However, being parked in a residence place dropped by just over 14%, from 6,955 to 5,933, but remained amongst the highest. The data also revealed that there were thousands of repeat offenders in the borough, with the number of repeated fines also increasing by 1.9% between the 2 years, from 2,584 to 2,634. PM's pledge to end shoplifter charter in new clampdown. It's disgraceful that people just working in their shops have to take abuse from customers. Sir Keir Starmer yesterday claimed the tide could be turning against shoplifting as he set out the government's efforts to crack down on retail crime. The Prime Minister said shop thefts were slightly down in the latest figures, and he wanted wider use of technology which allows CCTV footage to be shared immediately with the police. His comments came as a think tank highlighted figures showing 67% of shoplifting offenders go on to commit another offence within 12 months, up from 55% before the pandemic. In an address to the Usdaw Shop Workers Union, Sir Keir said, "It's disgraceful that people just working in their shop have to take abuse from customers. It's disgraceful that people feel sick to the stomach thinking about how they're going to get through the day, and it's disgraceful that people can have their lives and livelihoods ruined by persistent shop theft." He said the government had put an extra 3,000 neighbourhood police officers on the streets and scrapped the ridiculous rule which left theft of goods worth less than £200 not properly investigated by police. "That was a shoplifter's charter and we've ended it, and not before time," he said. "We've tightened up punishment too. We're giving police stronger powers, making the abuse and assault of retail workers a specific crime, and giving you the same protections as emergency workers." Sir Keir said he was not blind to how big this challenge is, but said the number of people charged had gone up 17% in the latest statistics and shop theft was down. The latest Office for National Statistics, the ONS, data showed shoplifting offences fell slightly last year, down from 516,611 in 2024 to 509,566 in 2025. Sir Keir said it's only slightly down, but the tide could be turning. The Prime Minister's speech came at the Centre for Social Justice, the CSJ, warned of a high street crime epidemic. The centre-right think tank highlighted figures uncovered by former Tory leader Sir Ian Duncan-Smith through parliamentary questions, which showed the extent of repeat offending. The think tank's analysis showed the average number of offences committed by shoplifters has nearly doubled in 5 years, rising from 5.5 to 9.1 offences per convicted thief. Sir Ian, the CSJ's chairman, said, "Communities across Britain are suffering from a high street crime wave, setting amidst years of economic difficulties. There is a good risk that some of our towns and city centres are left permanently hollowed out. A standalone offence for assaulting a retail worker is set to be introduced in the Crime and Policing Bill going through Parliament. But the two Houses of Parliament are currently in a tussle over the final draft of the bill, and the end of the parliamentary session nears." Styles admits to surprise over awards double. Callum Styles admitted he was surprised with being handed two awards for his season at Albion. Styles, signed from Barnsley back in 2024, has become very much a regular starter and fans' favourite at the Hawthorns. Interim boss James Morrison described him as a manager's dream, after he scooped both the Player of the Year and Supporters' Player of the Year crown. But the fullback expressed his pride, but insisted he was a bit surprised by being given the accolades. He said, "I was surprised, to be honest. I know personally I've had a consistent season, but there have been players that have also done well. And we obviously wasn't where we was at. So it kind of feels a bit like no, but I feel proud of what I've achieved this season personally. And hopefully we can kick on next season, because this club shouldn't be down there. It should be up there fighting for promotion. I feel like the staff here, they're all top quality and they push the standards to keep you preparing well and to keep on stuff and keep improving. And I've obviously took that on board, turned forward, and I'm more conscious of doing the extra bits and the extra bits of recovery to stay fit, to keep playing, to prepare for games. And yeah, I think that's the biggest factor in consistency. I've just got to keep pushing, and obviously we've just got to push each other, keep standards high." The 10 most shoplifted items in the UK. Number 1, packed meat such as steak, lamb and bacon. Number 2, razor blades. Number 3, whiskey, champagne, gin and other alcoholic products like Prosecco. Number 4, cosmetics, makeup and lipsticks. Number 5, cheese. Number 6, branded underarm deodorants. Number 7, batteries. Number 8, clothing accessories including scarves and handbags. Number 9, coffee. And number 10, baby clothes.
Albion Match Report. Ipswich Town reclaimed second place in the Championship after hanging on for a goalless draw with a West Bromwich Albion side that secured safety for the second time in 4 days. The Baggies were docked 2 points on Friday for spending breaches, which meant they needed at least 1 point to stay up after midweek win against Watford had previously appeared to get them over the line. Ipswich goalkeeper Christian Walton made a series of saves, including two fine efforts to deny Daryl DK either side of the break, to ensure the Tractor Boys left the West Midlands with a vital point. A share of the spoils means the Tractor Boys, who moved back above Millwall on goal difference, could all but secure an immediate Premier League return on Tuesday if they beat fellow top two hopefuls Southampton. But if the Saints win, then that race for automatic promotion will remain a four-way shootout, which will also include Middlesbrough. West Brom's punishment late on Friday transformed the complexion of game at the Hawthorns, with the hosts' status in the second tier back under threat. And their approach reflected the renewed importance of the fixture, with the Baggies dominating for the first half chances. A swerving shot from Ousmane Diakite and DK's quick thinking as he pounced on a moment of defensive hesitancy saw Ipswich goalkeeper Walton tested twice in quick succession. Nat Phillips, also called the visiting shot stopper, into action with a header while Alex Mowat shot from the edge of the box, demanding a diving save from Walton. Ipswich were limited by comparison, with their best chance scooped over the bar by Ivan Azon. Second half opportunities presented themselves in much the same way, as DK was foiled by Walton, while Jack Clark made a complete mess of a chance when found free at the back post. Ipswich did go on to find the back of the net, but Cedric Kibre's finish was ruled out for offside after Baggies goalkeeper Max O'Leary spilled a Jaden Philogene shot. While neither side was able to find a winner, the point was one to be savoured, as it confirmed West Brom's place in the Championship for another season, while also being enough to edge Ipswich ahead in the ceaseless race for the top two. James Morrison said, "We have done our talking on the pitch the past few weeks, and it probably worked in our favour going into the game, knowing what we had to do. The lads have been in a good place, and I have no hesitations going into this game because we were in a good place with the fight and determination. It was there, and they gave me the same performance again. We knew the fans would be right behind us, so we had to use that energy on the pitch, and I thought for 70 minutes we were there going toe-to-toe with a good side. For 70 minutes we were good, but then there was a bit of fatigue and we went a little bit into survival mode. But they brought on some good players, so that might have helped them. The lads gave everything again. They kept going to the end, and that's all we want, really. That's all we can ask for."
TNF Soundings.
Hi, I'm Bob Baker.
And I'm Jill Hardiker.
And together we are Sound and Vision,
bringing you the best information, technology and interviews for the visually impaired and those supporting them.
Technology has advanced so much now that there are lots of kitchen gadgets and appliances that will talk to you.
We've been chatting to a couple of companies that make and supply this kind of helpful technology.
First of all, we spoke to Jess Holmes, who is Head of Creative Marketing at Ravencourt Living, and she told us about their kitchen products that are available for the blind and visually impaired.
We've got talking clocks, and then also we've got our kitchen range with like the talking scales and the pan pickles. We do actually place a lot of orders over the phone. Some customers feel like they want more of a personal touch. They will call up and place an order, and we're more than happy to do that. It's lovely to speak to people. So we do find that that's quite a majority of our business that we do that. I thought I'd talk a little bit about our talking kitchen scales and jug. So you can actually buy them as a set, or you can place just the jug on its own. We do sell both. It's absolutely fantastic. You can change the measurements to grams, ounces, or millilitres. So you've got a range of variety depending on what you're really wanting to measure. It's really accessible. We've got two buttons on the front, one that's on and then one that changes the units. And the voice is Ian Story, the original founder of Ravencourt. It's in all of our talking products, which we do have a lot of feedback that people really like that, and it's got a really clear voice, which is what we want. We want it to be as easy to hear as possible. And then on the jug, it's got really clear markings, really bold. So if you've still got a little bit of vision left, it's really fantastic. If you don't want that talking element to it, that's why we do sell the jug on its own. It's dishwasher safe, and it's got a easy to pour spout at the top. It's got a really easy to grip handle, so you won't find it will slip out your hand. If you turn it on and then you've got any water that you're measuring, you'll pop that in, you'll give it a second and it will register it. Then also you'll be able to hear it. You can take that out, pop that wherever you need to, then pop it back on, and it will then start from zero again, which then you can start again if you've, say, then measuring some flour or some sugar or something. You can easily change that to, say, grams if you really want to. It's all really clear. It's not too quick that you wouldn't be able to understand it, and obviously it is literally a press of a button and it will go back to the beginning of the measurements. I'd recommend just wiping the base clean. It is battery operated, so obviously it is encased inside of it. You've got no electrical power, so you're not going to have to worry about if you spill any water on it or anything. And then obviously the jug is dishwasher safe if you did want to pop it in the dishwasher. So we also do a product called the Pan Pickle, which is a two silicone kind of little circles like this that you'd pop on your counter, and it's a really great way to keep pots and pans stable. So they are meant for induction hobs, so obviously when you're cooking you've got really high temperatures, it can keep it still so that you're not gonna spill anything and it's not gonna slowly go off the edge. A lot of people do like to just use these on the side rather than the induction hob. And also a lot of our users, if you do place the easy to see measuring jug, a lot of people do like to have the Pan Pickles either side of that as well, just to keep it more stable if you're measuring any liquid. We do actually have a little device called the one button clock. So that's a really small device that you just press the button on top and it will announce the timeout to you. So you could keep this on your kitchen counter, really nice and easy. You can also set an alarm on it so it will go off at a certain time. And that's also great if you've got something cooking in the oven, you could press that on it, will tell you the time, you go, oh, I'm just going to set an alarm for the next hour, and it will sort that out. So there's a little button on the bottom of the device, you'll be able to feel it, and you go through the settings really easy. It will set you through set time, set hour, set date, and then you'll go through and it will say set alarm, and then you'll set the time with the button on the top. And then you'll leave it and it'll go set alarm. And then that's all you've got to do. It talks you through everything. We're such a small team. We value ourselves and our exceptional customer service. We're always willing to help. We do love to hear people's thoughts and ideas because we're always wanting to grow as a company and we're always wanting to be as inclusive as possible. So that's why we do love to have the innovative side of the business, that we can do that and we can deliver that to people.
Next, we spoke to Simon Cox, who is a director at Cobalt Systems Limited. They make and supply a range of daily living aids, including talking cooking equipment.
We've developed microwaves, combination ovens, induction hobs, and our latest products over the last couple of years have been the talking single air fryer and the double air fryer. All our products are available directly from our website. You can also buy them from your local resource centres, of which we supply numerous ones all around the country. They are also available on Amazon. So if you don't have access to a computer or you can't access the website, just give us a call. We take orders over the phone. Generally speaking, most orders, depending on the time of day they come in, will either go out that day or the following day. And they're sent out articles for the blind. So in a lot of cases, other than things like the microwaves and the air fryers, there is no charge for shipping. If you're not entirely happy, you get it and you feel that it's not what you wanted, send it back. We give you a full refund. Over the years, from all the exhibitions and conferences and things that we've done, our development has been driven by feedback from end users on not only products that we have that we could possibly change to make better, but also ideas for new products. And it still is very much driven that way. And that's where we get a lot of our product development ideas. We have always got new products in development because ultimately we'd like to make the products as cheap as we possibly can and available to a larger number of people. We still manufacture a lot of stuff here in the UK. Most of it is done in-house. We decided long ago that customer help and customer feedback is most important. So I know if I buy something and ring a company up, you know, they want to get you off the phone as quick as possible. We're not like that. We tell all our employees, especially the people that work on the phone, if we have to spend an hour on the phone talking through somebody how to do something, then that's what we do. If they need additional help, we have, you know, all the instructions are available for all the products on the website in a text document only, so it's dead easy for them to download for screen readers. We have audio instructions for everything. And fundamentally, if the customer is still having problems or the end user, we say, give us a call. We'll talk you through it over the phone. Ideally, if you're sat next to it, we can talk you through while you're using it. So again, not only do we tell people how to do it, we tell them which buttons to press and make them do it whilst we're on the phone so we can hear and we can say, can you hear that? That said, you know, timer only, or that said, whatever. And they say, oh, yeah, I didn't hear that before. So, you know, we make a point of, wherever possible, spending as much time on the phone by sending additional stuff over if necessary. We also tell them where their nearest resource centre is that might have one. So if somebody wants to look at something perhaps before they buy it, or somebody's bought something and is having a problem and still can't quite manage to fathom it out even after the help we give them, then, you know, the local resource centre may be able to also help them. We get a lot of roadies that will ring up and say, look, you know, we're from Cambridge. There's about 15 of us. Can we come and spend the morning with you? So we'll say, yeah. Bring the biscuits, and they'll come up with a pack of biscuits, and we'll sit down and we'll spend however long going through every product with all of these guys, because these are all the people that are going out to see users in their home. Because we're also on the Norfolk boards, a lot of people who have come with their families to hire a boat for a holiday during the summer often stop here and walk up the road and come and see us. You know, there's no appointment. Ideally, a bit of advance notice, especially if there's a number of people coming, you know, a day before or a couple of days before. You know, it's a bit hard sometimes, depending on what's going on, if a dozen people suddenly turn up at the door. We have a mini resource centre where all our products are there. So, yeah, people can come. Individual customers come all the time, whether it's for a watch battery replacement or to buy product. Anybody's welcome to come. Sometimes we get people who come to Norwich on the train, and they get the train from Norwich to Reedham, and then they give us a call and we pick them up at the station and bring them to us and then drop them back at the stations. Where possible, we're willing to help as much as we can. When we developed the induction hob, I spent 2 days in London at the eye hospital talking to people coming in, and I was surprised at how people were putting their fingers in the flame or where the flame would be on their gas hobs and lighting it and waiting until their fingers burned before they realised that that particular burner was lit. And it horrified me. So spending time in Moorfield, Friends of Moorfield, we do quite a bit of work listening to them and spending time talking to them, and equally as well other hospitals around the UK. So again, not only is it a great source of information for us, but it does help us focus on products that everyday use is paramount. If I was to sit here and said we never had a product faulty, you know, I'd be like Pinocchio. That's impossible. We're always going to get a faulty product, whether it goes faulty through use or whether it's just a component fault. But what we like to do is to get it back, get it repaired, and get it back to the customer as soon as and as fast as possible. So ultimately, 3 or 4 days is the maximum you're going to be without that product. The air fryers are a great example of, because of the cost of living crisis and the price of energy, people wanted something relatively cheap to cook, relatively easy to use, relatively easy to clean, and asked us for air fryers. So we went ahead and, you know, we put everything into developing it as quickly as possible that we could, and we achieved that. You know, we do a single one and a double one. Same with the induction hobs, the microwaves and things like that. They're all there to help people be able to give themselves a hot meal.
Both companies told us about the development process for these gadgets and appliances, and the fact that it doesn't just happen overnight. There are so many different aspects to take into consideration to make the final product work.
That's right, Bob. And sometimes what starts out as a good idea might not be able to be developed due to cost or just the fact that the idea proves to be unworkable. But both companies told us they try very, very hard to make them work.
These are just two of the companies that we chatted to, amongst others, who are doing the same thing. So here's the contact details for Ravencourt Living. Their email address is info@ravencourt.com. That's info@ ravenecourt.com. And their telephone number is 01780 489 100.
The contact details for Cobalt Systems Limited are their email address is sales@cobalt.co.uk. That's sales@cobalt.co.uk. And their telephone number is 01493 700 172. Alternatively, you can contact your local blind and visually impaired organisation, who will have lots of information on these and more kitchen products.
So it's with great thanks to Jess from Ravenecourt Living and to Simon from Cobalt Systems Limited for their time, information and input. It never ceases to amaze us when we are doing research for all these podcasts just how much technology continues to advance.
Hey, Bob, did you hear the one about the air fryer that was chatting to the weighing scales?
No, sorry, Jill. I was too busy listening to the microwave.
Thank you for listening to Sound and Vision with Bob and Jill. So until the next time, it's goodbye from us both.
TNF Soundings.
To end this edition, I'm fitting in a summary or review, if you like, of the mindfulness session the small group had that visited the Oak House in West Bromwich last week. And I've never been really certain what mindfulness is about. I'm not sure how much clearer you'll be after hearing this, but you will know what it's about. And I think Sandra and Sophie did this with the talking news in mind, although it might get included on the next issue of the SVI activities CD and newsletter, which will probably be winging its way to you in the next few weeks. But here for the time being is a review of the first session they had at Oak House, where Sophie went around asking everybody what they got from the session.
Would you like to maybe give an overview of what we've done today, please?
We have walked barefoot on the grass, in the shade, out the shade, on mowed grass and unmowed grass. We've been in the sand in the shade where it was cold, and we have been balancing up against very big rocks.
Thank you. And this is at Oak House with Sophie from Wonder in Nature, doing nature connection through the senses and bringing in some mindfulness. So I'll go to Sonia next.
Well, I went on the ship.
You climbed all the way?
I climbed to the top of the ship.
And what angle was that ship at? It wasn't on the flat, was it?
No, I don't know what angle.
It was about 45 degrees. Yeah. And then you steered that ship.
Did
you crash it in the waves?
No.
Was it your fault?
No. Yeah. And we looked at some of the artefacts.
Yes.
In the kitchen. About the spices, pestle and mortar.
Yeah.
There's a fish there as well.
And
then we looked at some of those.
And the star anise, you were handling that spice, weren't you?
Yeah, star anise.
And what was the one in the jar?
The
acorn.
Yeah.
They used to eat acorns, acorn butter perhaps.
Yeah.
And the clove.
Cloves.
So Sandra, would you like to tell people a bit about today?
Lovely, lovely walk. Lovely mindfulness walk. Lovely sunshine, lovely weather. I enjoyed particularly, well, everything, but particularly the balance aspect of it. I'm going to practice balancing sticks for relaxation and mindfulness at home in my own garden, and also balancing on one leg, because I feel I could do it again if I really put my mind to it, start doing it properly. So I'm going to, that's my homework. Lovely Sophie, fantastic guide and
Thank you, Sandra, it's a pleasure. Martin?
I had went out to try and find something a bit different, like different seeds heads on grasses or
what moss felt like to people, or I got some leaves, like off some wild the garlic, and I crushed that and let people have the smell of it, and so they could get some different aspects of what things were.
Yeah.
Very enjoyable, yeah. Thank you.
Teresa?
I've had a lovely afternoon. I really like starting the session with a mindfulness session. I like the idea of connecting with the earth and with the ground, because I can really feel it. I like being barefoot. I like feeling we're being brought back to nature. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed going into Oak House. It felt like going into a cold house, an old-fashioned cold house, because it was freezing in there, but it was. I liked that. I loved balancing the sticks. I managed to balance two.
Yes, you did.
One on top of the other.
Yeah.
I liked walking around in the sand barefoot and climbing up the pirate ship. And even though I was being told I was like 3 foot off the ground, I felt like I was about 10 foot off the ground. But it was amazing. So thank you, Sophie. It was brilliant. And I like the parts where you encourage us to stop and pause and experience what's going on around us, like the wind, the sun, the shade. So thank you. It was brilliant.
I enjoyed the mindfulness side of it because I suffer badly with my menopause, extreme menopausal conditions. It helps me to focus and centre. Instead of focusing on all the negative that's going on around me. Mm-hmm. I found out where 12 o'clock was today. anybody wants to know that story, come and find me. Yeah. Thank you.
And the curiosity on that, you were looking for the moon.
I was looking for the moon, if that helps people.
Yeah.
And then somebody said it's at 12 o'clock and I went, where's 12 o'clock?
Thank you. And last but not least, Ricky?
Yes, hello. Just basically in a nutshell, the whole exercise has been very good, coupled with the good weather. I can second that. And, yeah, I like the taste of everything, really, in a nutshell. And certainly it's a lovely Tudor building, not one I've been in before. I've been in similar ones. So, yeah, all in all, a very good afternoon had by all, including myself.
Thank you, Ricky.
That's okay.
And we recorded another thank you earlier. And
that's okay.
And Leslie, the manager, is here. So what was it you recorded?
I said if there was any way of giving some kind of contribution, I would be happy to do so.
You said thank you, didn't you?
Thank you. A big thanks you. All the same in a nutshell. Yeah, thanks very much.
Leslie.
That's okay, Leslie. Thank you very much.
Round of applause, yeah.
Thank you.
So that was just the first of our sessions. We've got 6 sessions in all. 3 more will be at Oak House and 2 at West Smethwick Park. We will be announcing them on the Talking News, and you have had it on the printed newspaper. So if you'd like to get involved, please contact SBI to register your place. And we look forward to welcoming you. Thank you. Sophie, Wonder in Nature, signing out.
And a big thank you to Sophie, who I find very professional and businesslike with her announcements and that report on the visit to Oak House. And I might try one of those walks myself. I do join in occasionally with some of the activities when I've got time. Thanks then to our readers, who this week were Mia, Jan, Rachel, Linda, Janet and Trevor, not forgetting Linda in Rowley, bringing us the good news of West Bromwich Albion drawing this time against Ipswich, and that should mean they survive in the Championship, where they should have some very interesting competition next season. I hope you've enjoyed listening to this edition. It seemed quite a lot to fit in this time round, and I'm hoping one way and another to include all or most of Heather Wastie's talk and entertaining session at the AGM. And we had a good time on Monday, and quite a few turned out, I'm glad to say. You'll be hearing more in the next editions from Heather, who's given us permission to use her material. And she is on Black Country Radio. If you can get that, I might try and post a link to it on the SVI website. And they do have a catch-up facility as well. She's on Billy Spakeman's Homer and Chains programme of a Sunday afternoon. But I must close for now. Let's hope for a bit more spring weather. But for the time being, closing for this week. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back with you, of course, next week after the bank holiday.
To use our talk phone service to listen to Sandwell Talking News or leave us a message, phone 0121 699 6696. If you are using a landline in the 0121 area, then just dial 699 6696.